Hi friends, RC here with Tobacco and Brew, bringing you this month's Cigar of the Humidor, Oliva Melano Maduro. From the verdant fields of Jalapa, Nicaragua, comes an epic 95-rated cigar, wrapped in a Maduro leaf from San Andres. Expect notes of espresso, anise, and walnut liqueur. Get yours today at Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
Experience a wintry mix with the Shasta College Symphony Orchestra Saturday, February 28th at 7:30 p.m. at the Shasta College Theater. Enjoy music from Verdi and Beethoven and more, plus a melody from My Fair Lady featuring the outstanding winners of the Emerging Artist Solo and Area Competition. This special concert is sponsored in part by Vituity Anesthesia Reading. Tickets and information can be found online at shastacollege.edu/event.
From the historic campus of Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, where the good, the true, and the beautiful are taught, nurtured, and honored, this is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, bringing the activity and education of the college to listeners across the country.
So, you know, you start to see the dominoes start to tumble. It helped the Reagan administration kind of get the confidence to do operations like Urgent Fury. And then, you know, obviously people started to take notice in some of those Eastern Bloc countries that America was back.
This is your host, Scott Bertram. Welcome to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. That was John Bachman. He's the author of the new book, Turning Point, How Reagan Liberated Grenada and Won the Cold War. We'll go in depth with John about his book on this week's episode. Also coming up a bit later, from Hillsdale's physics department, Nathan Herring, we'll discuss the great physicist James Clerk Maxwell. First, we're joined by John Bachman. He is an award-winning journalist and host of John Bachman Now on Newsmax, also the author of the new book, Turning Point, How Reagan Liberated Grenada and Won the Cold War. John, thanks so much for joining us.
It's great to be with you, Scott.
You say in Turning Point that this, Grenada, why you're writing about it, in fact, is that the battle for Grenada begins the fall of the Soviet Union. How do those dominoes fall?
You know, this was really the first real major military conflict since Vietnam that involved all branches of the military. And there had been this lingering fear of loss and, you know, the cloud that hung over the country after Vietnam. And it really took something like this, even though it was a relatively small war, it took something like this to kind of turn the tides and get America to get its moxie back. And that's certainly what happened in Grenada. This is perhaps the only instance where in our lifetimes where we went into a country, we fully liberated that country from a Marxist regime, returned the power back to the people, and also rescued a lot of Americans in the process. And it sent a message to the rest of the world. A lot of the countries that were turning communist in Central and South America, to the Soviet Union, to Cuba as well, that America was no longer going to cede any more territory to Marxists in their own backyard.
Turning Point is not just a description of the battle itself, Operation Urgent Fury, but also a history lesson into what was happening before and leading up to that event. And the change all starts with a change in the White House, with Ronald Reagan winning the presidency. He rejects this idea that we can coexist. He rejects the detente that previous presidents had set. How would you describe Reagan's philosophy when it comes to matters like what we saw in Grenada?
I think Reagan was perfectly clear, and he understood exactly what the objective was and what needed to happen. Yes, he wanted to end communism, and he gets credit for doing that, ending the Cold War. But more than anything else, Reagan really wanted to get rid of nuclear weapons. That was his ultimate goal, a goal that still eludes everyone today. But he understood what it took. He understood what the real dangers were that faced the United States then, and to, in many aspects, have come back to haunt us again in present day. But Reagan, I think, is different than a lot of presidents. And this is something that I was told by many of the people that were in the administration, people that I interviewed for the book. You could never move Reagan more than 1 or 2 degrees off his true North Star on certain issues. And one of those was democracy, freedom for countries that were living under the thumb of communism.
Something that occurred to me as I read through Turning Point is this idea of Ronald Reagan and the philosophy you outline. How was he so sure? Why was he so sure that this Cold War was not going to turn hot, at least anytime soon?
I mean, it was funny because Reagan was referred to inside the Soviet Union as the cowboy. And I think a lot of people here in the United States, some of his adversaries, his critics, many members of the press, thought of him as reckless. They didn't give him credit for being, you know, a real intellectual, you know, someone who knew what he was talking about. But Reagan was really backed by his faith. Mm-hmm. And that was something that guided him in all the decisions pretty much that he made. And I think also one of the things that really inspired me to write this book was I had a conversation with a man named Sal Russo, who was a lobbyist in Washington, D.C. But prior to that, he knew Ronald Reagan before he even ran for governor of California. And he would always talk about how cool, calm, and collected Ronald Reagan was. People would stab him in the back politically, rhetorically speaking, and he wouldn't seek revenge. But the one time he was really upset is when he, you know, decided to go into Grenada. They felt like for security reasons, they could not give Margaret Thatcher any heads up. They had been talking about it, but they didn't actually tell her that they were going in. And Reagan was really rattled by the fact that he worried what that would do to his friendship with Thatcher. He considered her to be someone critical to his ultimate goals of bringing peace and stability around the world. And he worried that if he did this, he could fracture their friendship. And, you know, that's evident. There's recordings of the actual phone call he made to her immediately after the fact. And it did cause Margaret Thatcher a lot of turmoil in her own country. But because they were so close, they obviously continued to work together. And she stayed in office even after Ronald Reagan did. But there was a true bond between those two. And without the way they worked together, it's fair to say that the Cold War would not have ended when it did.
I was curious, would it be accurate to say the U.S. feelings about the Falklands War be somewhat similar to the U.K. feelings about what happened in Grenada?
Well, we dive into this a little bit in the book, and it's one of the things that I write about because Reagan didn't really have the team he needed in place from the get-go. He had Alexander Haig as his Secretary of State, and Alexander Haig was kind of in a different position than Ronald Reagan was when it came to the Falklands War. And ultimately, you know, the United States publicly, they were not, you know, on board with that. But again, this, it shows how independent Reagan was in his thinking. And, you know, everyone knows the story. Alexander Haig was ultimately, he ultimately resigned and Reagan accepted his resignation. That's a critical point in the story because it tells us that puts George Shultz in as Secretary of State. And really, that's the team that Reagan needed to make these type of decisions to, in fact, invade Grenada.
Talking to John Bachman, his book is Turning Point, How Reagan Liberated Grenada and Won the Cold War. Let's set the table a bit here. This is 1983. A Cuban and Soviet influence has entered Grenada. There's an assassination of the ruling president. And Grenada is now under the thumb of a brutal Marxist regime. So sort of explain what's happening during this time.
Yeah, there was a president named Maurice Bishop, and he was relatively moderate as communists go. Maurice Bishop had even come to the United States. He wanted to, by many accounts, he wanted to eventually hold elections. Grenada was part of the British Commonwealth, and it was ruled by a guy named Eric Gehry, who was sort of a strong man, didn't really treat the people properly. And then you had a communist revolution. Maurice Bishop came in. It was a bloodless revolution. And like a lot of places around the world, there was this appetite for these liberation fronts, similar to what happened in Nicaragua around the same time. But when Maurice Bishop realized that he was going to have to choose between the West and communism, he started to reach out to Ronald Reagan. He came to ask for money for the runway. Obviously, Reagan was not going to give any money to a communist. And there, his number two is his friend, his closest confidant was a guy named Bernard Coward, who was more hardline than Maurice Bishop. And I think this is one of the lessons when you research communist regimes around the world. If you start to waver from your Marxist position, there is a more ruthless Marxist willing to step in and have you assassinated. And that's what happened to Maurice Bishop. Bernard Coward and the Grenadians under his power assassinated Maurice Bishop. And that is when the urgency really came into place for the Americans, because there was a St. George's Medical School there. There was hundreds of students studying there. There were over 1,000 Americans on the island. And there was a man who actually worked inside the Reagan administration named Constantine Menges, who was a national security advisor, who was a fascinating person. He has a great book called Inside the National Security Council. And he was the one who really pitch this idea and push this idea from inside the administration that we need to not only rescue these Americans, but we have a real opportunity to restore democracy to a tiny island and send a message to the world that this is not going to be tolerated. And so what the Reagan administration certainly did not want to do was repeat what happened with the Islamist revolution in Iran. Mm-hmm. They were very concerned. There was a shoot on sight order. There was a curfew in place. And, when you hear the stories of some of these Americans, their lives were being threatened. And so that's why there was so much secrecy. That's why they decided at the time not to bring any press along, which was also very controversial at the time. There was no embedded press that went into Grenada with the initial wave of troops. So that paramount reason number one was to get in there and rescue the Americans, but they also really thought they could do a restore democracy there.
John, hold right there. We'll return in a moment with more about Turning Point, how Reagan liberated Grenada and won the Cold War with John Bachman. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
KCNR Shasta is also broadcasting at K243CT Reading.
Mandiva's Cabinets, the local pros.
Mandiva's Cabinets in Anderson designs custom kitchens, bathrooms, and offices that no big box store can match. They are the local pros who know.
Mandiva's Cabinets, the local pros who know. Mandiva's Cabinets, the local pros.
530-365-8108 or visit mandivascabinets.com.
Looking for work? O2 Employment Services has been working with local job seekers for the past 20 years. If you're tired of uploading your resume and getting no response, it's time to let O2 help you find that perfect position. Oh, and by the way, you pay absolutely nothing for our service. If you'd like our help, head on over to our website at o2es.com, click apply now, and complete our online application. We have connections with over 600 local businesses. Once we have your information and understand what you're looking for, we can introduce you to all the positions you may wish to consider. We currently have over 100 available positions, and we would love to match you with the one you're looking for. O2 Employment Services, the North State's leading staffing agency. Give us a call at 530-223-4674. That's 530-223-4674. Or visit us online at o2es.com.
Charlu's Tap House in Anderson, where tradition, taste, and togetherness come to life. Warm up with our made-from-scratch soups and signature family sauces, crafted from cherished recipes passed down through generations. Watch the magic happen when we hand-toss every pizza to order, then bake it to perfection. Crispy, cheesy, and made with love. Let the little ones explore our brand-new adventure room with bounce houses, arcade games, and even a make-your-own pizza table where the kids can make their own pizza. Charlu's Tap House in Anderson, where tradition, taste, and togetherness come to life.
Open now at Turtle Bay Museum, Thomas D. Mangelson, A Life in the Wild, featuring 40 of the legendary wildlife photographer's most powerful images captured in the wild. These iconic once-in-a-lifetime moments include polar bears dancing on Arctic ice, a salmon leaping straight into the jaws of a massive brown bear, landscapes from all seven continents, and much more. The A Life in the Wild tour is produced by David J. Wagner, LLC, and is on display at Turtle Bay Museum now through May 3rd. Learn more at turtlebay.org.
Hi, I'm Dr. Maria Salas, owner of HealthWise Chiropractic. My focus is to help people feel better, look better, and take control of their health with a simple, life-changing plan. It starts with smarter eating choices and adding the right amount of protein to support gut health and reduce inflammation. You'll also receive weekly accountability coaching, a free guide, and a complimentary consultation with me, Dr. Maria Salas. Ready to feel your best? Call or text 530-227-3984.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. Obtaining a California concealed weapons license will allow the licensed individual to transport a listed handgun in their vehicle or on their person in public. For application instructions, training, and other information, contact NFI at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and remember, it's our right and our responsibility.
With new episodes delivered right to your device.
If you want to come close to stepping inside a Hillsdale College classroom, well, the Hillsdale College Podcast Network is for you. Get informed and get entertained at podcast.hillsdale.edu. That's podcast.hillsdale.edu. We're back on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. Continuing our conversation now with John Bachman of Newsmax. His new book is Turning Point, How Reagan Liberated Grenada and Won the Cold War. John, in writing the book, what did you find? What was different about Grenada? What has changed in the 40-plus years since then in how we think about and how we view operations like this?
We hear so much these days about these regime change wars and all their foreign military adventures, but I felt like it was really important to give, you know, my generation, I'm 46, and so many of my peers, and even the younger generation, tell a story about a time when Americans did succeed in battle. At the time, you know, this also happened almost at the same time, in fact, at the same week as the Beirut, Lebanon Marine Barracks bombing. There's actually a story in the book about Ronald Reagan being at Augusta National Country Club. He was supposed to be his first vacation, first time off since he was shot. He was there playing golf with George Shultz and other folks. And then there was a hostage situation. A guy ran the gates of Augusta National, took some people hostage. He was upset about the economy. Ronald Reagan talked him down. That guy was arrested. The Marine Barrack bombing happened in Beirut. And while this is all going on, Reagan has the clear head and the thought to go ahead and authorize Operation Urgent Fury. So it's, all this stuff was going on at the same time, but he understood the importance of the American lives and the importance of restoring democracy, even on a tiny island that most people had never heard of or certainly couldn't pick out on the map.
John Bachman with us. His book, Turning Point, How Reagan Liberated Grenada and Won the Cold War. You say in Turning Point that Reagan, from an early point, was inclined to act militarily in this matter in Grenada. Was there anyone close or inside the administration telling him that was the wrong thing to do?
At this point, no. And again, this came after Alexander Haig. You know, there's a famous story, too. And Haig was kind of all over the map on what he was telling Reagan he wanted him to do and what his policy should be. And that's one of the reasons why Reagan, I think, was inclined to accept Haig's resignation. There's a story about early on in the administration when Haig basically told Reagan that he should turn Cuba into a parking lot. And Reagan understood the implications of that and the repercussions of that. And there's also a story when Ronald Reagan, right before, this was Christmas of 1981, they were going to orchestrate a strike of the dock workers here in the United States. There had been a deal reached with the Soviet countries that they were going, that the United States, you know, so part of the thawing of tensions, they were going to send farm equipment over to Ukraine and the Soviet Union in exchange, you know, just to keep trade relations going a little bit. But Reagan wanted to orchestrate a strike and have the American dock workers refuse to send the equipment over there out of solidarity with the Polish and Lech Walesa and the solidarity movement there as they were starting to push back. And it was one of these situations where Alexander Haig said if Reagan did that and the Soviets caught wind of it, it would start World War III. And Reagan calmly said, you know, let's do it. And as he walked out of the room, Haig was emphatic about, you can't do this, Mr. President. And Reagan calmly said, well, boys, you better stock up on vodka. And he left the room in his kind of signature way. But that goes back to what we were talking about, how clear-headed Ronald Reagan was and what he believed. And we saw that later on in the administration. But this was really the point, I think, where he had the team around him that he needed to make these types of decisions to, you know, there was a lot of fear still from Democrats. I also tell the story about, you know, how resistant Democrats were to Republicans needing to build up the military. Again, Reagan understood the time. He knew what was necessary. And this was just, you know, a small geographic, small time frame part of the administration, but something that set the stage for what was to come.
Familiar name for many of us, General Norman Schwarzkopf, description inside Turning Point of how he becomes involved in Operation Urgent Fury.
Yes, it was fascinating to see the story of General Schwarzkopf and what he meant to this operation. He was the Army's main commanding officer. He was tapped for this operation, and really did some heroic things to make sure that, you know, the fighting was intense for those 4 days. And a lot of people were really badly hurt. And, you know, General Schwarzkopf was obviously a soldier's general and made that happen. You know, from Georgia, he was on base there and got tapped to lead the operation in Grenada. Kind of quickly saw that there were some bad decisions being made by the Joint Chiefs of Staff and the Pentagon, but really kind of marshaled everyone together to make sure it was a successful operation.
John Bachman with us at book Turning Point, How Reagan Liberated Grenada and Won the Cold War. 4 days of fighting, if my number is correct, 19 Americans killed in Operation Urgent Fury. Did Reagan consider everything a success when all was said and done?
Yes, he did. And, you know, I think everyone else in the administration considered it in the administration a success. You know, Otto Reich, who was once the ambassador of Venezuela and was an influential figure in Republican politics, really said that what happened after Grenada for the military and for U.S. foreign policies, they kind of shook off the Vietnam era, you know, malaise, mm-hmm. for lack of a better word. And that's why we call this book A Turning Point, because it reestablished American power, and especially hegemony in this part of the world.
And then, John, what are the consequences here? After Grenada, what happens next that again leads us toward the fall of the Soviet Union?
What happened internally inside the Soviet Union, and we dive into this in the book a little bit as well. I mean, the Soviet Union was being ruled by a gerontocracy of old bureaucrats who didn't really understand modern times, and Reagan had said, you know, by the time he came into office, the Soviet premiers kept dying on him. And what the message that this sent to the Soviet Union is that the Americans would pick up arms and defend their own people, mm-hmm. that were in Grenada, and they would also, you know, defend territory in their backyard. This also created a bit of a rift between the Cubans and the Soviets. Maurice Bishop, who was the president, the more moderate aspect of the communist inside Grenada, he was very close with Fidel Castro, and Bernard Coward had more connections inside the Kremlin. And it was when Bernard Coward made the decision to assassinate Maurice Bishop, there was, you know, a bit of a rift between Cuba and the Soviet Union, and it caused some distrust there. And while the United States was getting stronger, that alliance was weakened a little bit by all of this. And so, you know, you start to see the dominoes start to tumble. I mentioned Poland earlier. That was another aspect of that, mm-hmm. That helped the Reagan administration kind of get the confidence to do operations like Urgent Fury. And then, you know, obviously people started to take notice in some of those Eastern Bloc countries that America was back.
John Bachman, the author of the new book, Turning Point, How Reagan Liberated Grenada and Won the Cold War. Also an award-winning journalist. You can catch him as host of John Bachman Now on Newsmax. John, thanks for the history lesson inside Turning Point. We appreciate it. Best of luck with the book.
All right, Scott, thank you so much.
Up next, Nathan Herring, assistant professor of physics here at Hillsdale College, continues his series on great physicists this week. More on James Clerk Maxwell. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Now is a great time to prepare for the upcoming wildfire season. REU and city staff are busy clearing vegetation to mitigate wildfire risk to our power lines, facilities, and the community. You can also prepare by trimming back shrubs and tree branches that are closer than 5 feet from your home. Clear debris from your roof and gutter and clear dead vegetation on your property. For information about tree trimming and proximity to power lines, call 530-224-4356. Please remember, we all need to work together to prevent wildfires in our community. We'll be right back.
As a thank you for your outstanding service, Wind River Resort and Casino would like to honor you with our Military Monday promotion. Join us every Monday from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. to receive your dining discounts and free slot play. Active or retired military members can present their military ID at the River Club to be entered into this weekly promotion. For more details, download the Wind River app or visit windriver.com. Find your moment at Wind River Resort and Casino.
Hi, this is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home, too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
Planning a wedding? Celebrate the moment with a free dinner for two at Odell Craft Barbecue. With our slow-smoked brisket that melts in your mouth, even Texans say it's some of the best they've ever had. We cater events and weddings of all sizes, from intimate gatherings to receptions of 1,000 guests. We make delicious food and great service, so you can stay present with the people who matter. Odell Craft Barbecue, real wood, real fire, real flavor. Book your free tasting at ReddingBarbecue.com. Again, book your free tasting at ReddingBarbecue.com.
Workers' compensation cases can move really slowly, and it's frustrating. Don't get pressured into hiring the first law firm you meet with just because they were fast to get you on their schedule. Your case impacts every aspect of your life. You want a local attorney that understands that and will get you the best outcome. Interview Patrick Orman of Gorman Law to see if he is the right attorney and to see if you really need an attorney. He will tell you the truth. Call 530-262-2168 or schedule online at Gorman Comp Law. Consultations and workers' comp are always free.
Ready to turn your dreams into reality? At Simpson University, we offer a private Christian education that enriches your academic journey with faith and purpose. Whether you're pursuing your undergraduate degree, completing your degree, or advancing through graduate studies, our dynamic programs, personalized mentorship, and vibrant community are here to support you. Discover how Simpson University can help you achieve your goals and grow spiritually. Visit simpsonu.edu today to learn more. Simpson University, where your potential is limitless.
At Plumas Bank, we understand business because we've grown alongside you in the communities we call home. We're proud to grow in Reading and excited to welcome Anderson and Red Bluff to the Plumas Bank family. With our new locations, your business gains expanded lending powers, more convenient locations, and more than 40 years of trusted community banking experience. Plumas Bank, building stronger communities. Learn more at plumasbank.com.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. We invite you to check out older episodes of this program and lots of great Hillsdale College audio over at podcasts.hillsdale.edu. You also can find those shows via your favorite podcast provider or over at YouTube. Larry Arn Show, Imprimis, Hillsdale College Online Courses Podcast, and much more. All of it available at podcast.hillsdale.edu or wherever you find your audio.
We're joined by Dr. Nathan Herring, Assistant Professor of Physics here at Hillsdale College. Dr. Herring, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
We continue today our look profiles of great physicists, and today it's James Clerk Maxwell's time in the spotlight. There might be some of our listeners who know about James Clerk Maxwell. How would you explain to them briefly why he's one of the giants of physics?
Yeah, James Clerk Maxwell is inarguably one of the most important physicists in the history of the subject, and particularly when we talk about the 19th century. He is not only one of the fathers of an area of physics called statistical mechanics, he is also a significant proponent of electromagnetic theory. He played an instrumental role in putting electromagnetic theory into its ultimate form, he's got these four equations called Maxwell's equations. I'm sure we'll dive into them in just a second, but they are appropriately named after him. And for that reason, he is a famous figure in the history of physics.
All right, so you read my mind. What exactly are Maxwell's equations, and why are they such a big deal?
Yes. So the Maxwell's equations are the four mathematical laws that describe the theory of classical electromagnetism, which is a theory that purports to explain all the electrical and magnetic interactions of matter in two steps. So first, there are these objects called electric and magnetic fields, which fill all of space. You can think of them as these continuous substances that pervade space. And these fields are produced by electrical charges, charges in motion and just charges distributed in some particular way. They generate these fields. And those fields then in turn exert forces on those charges. And so electromagnetism is the delicate interplay between the fields and the charges, kind of feeding back on one another. And Maxwell's equations describe how that process works. It's a set of four equations, which describe not only how the fields evolve over time, but also space. And they can be used to completely determine the properties of electric and magnetic fields in any, or a set of charges in any configuration. And in principle, allow us to understand all electromagnetic interactions, which are one of the fundamental interactions of contemporary physics.
Mm-hmm.
His equations synthesize the work of his predecessors in this area, so figures like Gauss, Ampere, Faraday. In fact, three of the Maxwell equations are named explicitly for those other physicists. So there's Gauss's law, Ampere's law, Faraday's law, and so you can see he's giving credit to those other thinkers. And the final thing I will say about these equations is Maxwell's theory of classical electromagnetism is the first example of a complete field theory in physics, a theory where the dynamical objects are fields. The other fundamental interactions of contemporary physics, the strong nuclear force, the weak nuclear force, and even gravity, today we also understand those in terms of field theory.
Mm-hmm.
And so particularly in the case of the two nuclear interactions, those effects, the theory that describes them, uses equations which are extremely similar to Maxwell's equations. They're like mathematical cousins of Maxwell's equations. And so even outside the area of electricity and magnetism, his influence is still felt.
Maxwell's work helped to lay the foundation for modern technology. How might you tell us we're living in Maxwell's world today?
Absolutely. The way we understand physics today, we believe that the dominant interaction that is at work as the various material constituents of our reality are interacting with each other, the dominant interaction is an electromagnetic one, which means it's described by Maxwell's equations. And by understanding that electromagnetic interaction in greater depth, engineers have been able to develop all sorts of fantastic technologies that completely change the way we live today. Telecommunications, microwave ovens, electrical power generation and transmission, electronic circuits, X-ray imaging, magnetic storage, as in the case of a hard drive, optics, whether it be fiber optics or lasers, these just to name a few. Basically, almost every piece of technology that you interact with on a daily basis is touched by Maxwell's equations.
Let's talk a bit about Maxwell, the person, as we do on these profiles, talking with Dr. Nathan Herring from Hillsdale's physics department. What do we know about Maxwell's upbringing, his education, that might help to shape his genius?
Yeah, he had a kind of unusual upbringing. His parents had him later in life. His mother was 40 when he was born, which was extremely uncommon for the 19th century. We know he had an elder sister, but she died in infancy, and his parents were sort of reluctant to have another child. It was a very traumatic experience for them, but eventually they did give birth to James Clerk Maxwell, and so he was effectively raised as an only child.
Mm-hmm.
As a youth, he had a great talent for memorization. We know he could recite all of the Psalms from memory, as well as many passages of John Milton. His mother, recognizing his intelligence, started tutoring him herself until she passed away due to cancer when he was 8 years old. After that, his father tried to take over his teaching, but that didn't go so well, and so he sent him away to Edinburgh Academy, where he finished his education. until then going to the University of Edinburgh for college, followed by some studies at the University of Cambridge. We know that he, while his father wasn't particularly good at teaching him as a child, we do know that he links his scientific curiosity as sort of originating from an experience with his father. His father took him to a demonstration put on by Robert Davidson, the inventor of the electric train. Robert Davidson did these demonstrations for the public on electric propulsion and mm-hmm. the magnetic force and that sort of thing. And Maxwell says that those demonstrations with his father, or seeing those demonstrations with his father, were sort of catalyzing experiences for his scientific curiosity.
Are there any particularly striking, quirky, interesting stories about Maxwell as a student or as a professor?
Yes, Maxwell was very beloved by his students, but he did have a reputation as being a poor lecturer. His students reported that he was often very disorganized, showing up to class the last minute, and he had a habit of being kind of a dry, monotonous speaker. There's one account where he wanted to demonstrate to his students the process of phase transition. So our listeners may remember from chemistry that we have these different phases of matter, like solids can turn to liquids and liquids can turn to gases and so on and so forth. Those are called phase transitions. And he wanted to demonstrate this using water. And so he made his students watch as he attempted to boil a large pot of water. And he had grossly underestimated how much time this was going to take.
Uh-huh.
And so they were just sitting there watching him. And he kept saying, oh, no, I think it's about to happen. Just hang on. And so he was not the most organized lecturer. I guess another quirky story, as a student, we know that he was actually very bored during secondary school. He was probably a little too advanced mm-hmm. for the education he was receiving. And so he spent a lot of time kind of coming up with his own math problems to work on. At age 14, he wrote his first mathematical paper in which he reproduced, kind of came up on his own with some ideas that Descartes had stumbled upon about more complicated geometric objects that have more foci, the technical term. So the listeners remember maybe an ellipse. An ellipse is a kind of fat circle.
Mm-hmm.
From the perspective of geometry, we say that an ellipse has these two focal points in the middle. The sum of the distances from those focal points must be a constant. And if you construct the figure that respects that property, you get an ellipse. So Maxwell was exploring, well, what happens if you have three focal points or four focal points? And he developed the mathematics for that. He did not know, however, that Descartes had already done that centuries earlier.
Talking physics this week with Nathan Herring from Hillsdale's Physics Department. James Clerk Maxwell is the great physicist being examined today. More next. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Reading Rancheria. I'd like to welcome everyone to come out for the annual Reading Rancheria Community Fund Wicked Themed Dinner, Friday, March 6th. Since its inception, the fund has given out over $4.6 million in support of our community. We'll be celebrating the wonderful organizations that we've been able to help, with a special bonus award being given out to an unsuspecting organization. It's an evening of prizes, awards, and music by Linda Bott and band. The annual Reading Rancheria Community Fund Wicked Themed Dinner, Friday, March 6th, is brought to you by this station and other proud sponsors.
Premier Oil Change is celebrating 20 years of our friendly oil changes. A lot has changed in 20 years, but our commitment to fast, friendly, excellent service has remained the same. To celebrate our 20th birthday, we're offering $20 off any oil change. All you have to do is go to our website at premieroilchange.com and receive your gift. In Reading, check out our new location at 905 East Cypress. Discount also available at our Lake Boulevard, Anderson, and Palisadro locations.
Premier, your friendly oil change. Premier, your friendly oil change.
Hi, I'm Steve Coburn, proud owner of Country Air Pet Resort here in Reading. I invite you to come and take a tour of my revitalized pet resort. Our goal here at Country Air is to make sure your pet can relax and have a healthy, happy time away from home. With friendly, caring people, lots of fresh air and exercise, good healthy food, and plenty of pampering, There are no small cages here. What we offer are large temperature-controlled runs and spacious exercise yards that are great for fun and socialization. We even offer daycare. Cats are treated to a two-room apartment plus playtime in our playroom. So stop by and take a tour of the best. You and your pet will want to come back to Country Air Pet Resort, where our motto is, we treat your pets as if they were our own. Country Air Pet Resort, 549-3335.
Now is a great time to prepare for the upcoming wildfire season. REU and city staff are busy clearing vegetation to mitigate wildfire risk to our power lines, facilities, and the community. You can also prepare by trimming back shrubs and tree branches that are closer than 5 feet from your home. Clear debris from your roof and gutter and clear dead vegetation on your property. For information about tree trimming and proximity to power lines, call 530-224-4356. Please remember, we all need to work together to prevent wildfires in our community.
The National Wild Turkey Federation's 27th Annual Redding Chapter Hunting Heritage Banquet is set for Saturday, March 14th at the Senior Citizen Center at 2290 Benton Drive. Doors open at 4:30 p.m., dinner at 6:30. To purchase tickets for the event, or if you'd like more information, contact Candy Muse at 530-526-8350 or online at nwtf.org/event.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. We welcome our new radio affiliate, KBOI, AM 670, FM 93.1 in Boise, Idaho. Thank you for tuning in to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. We're talking about James Clerk Maxwell, the great physicist, with Hillsdale's Nathan Herring. Nathan?
What scientific virtues most defined Maxwell? What made him different than other thinkers of his time?
That's a great question. I would say two things. First, the pursuit of unity. Maxwell was very well studied in many disparate areas of physics. Optics, electricity, magnetism, fluid dynamics, thermodynamics, mechanics. These sort of different arenas where one could devote their entire life to studying, have a scientific career in just one of those areas. Maxwell sort of dabbled in all of them, and he really was searching for a kind of syntopical, unified understanding of all these different subjects. And so he particularly liked to work on research questions that were at the intersections of these different domains, trying to find ways to bring them together. The second virtue, I would say, is his mathematical creativity. Maxwell was probably the most mathematically inventive physicist of the second half of the 19th century. He was able to draw mathematical analogies between different areas of physics and science. He could take two different problems that were about physically very different scenarios and find a way to find a sort of a mathematical bridge between them. He could translate those problems into the language of mathematics and then say, see, these are actually described by similar equations. And so I can leverage my intuition from one problem as I then apply it to the other problem. And that made him a very productive researcher. It allowed him to construct equations that used mathematics that were conceptually way ahead of his time.
Speaking of stories, is there an interesting story behind how Maxwell figured out that light is an electromagnetic wave?
Yes, this is a remarkable prediction of Maxwell's equations, something he did not set out to do initially. But his equations are sort of pregnant with the idea of light being an electromagnetic wave. And so the way that works is if you take his four equations, and he did this himself, if you take his equations and apply certain limits, the equations can kind of be combined and they can be substituted into one another. And when you do this, what you obtain at the end is the wave equation, which is an equation known to physicists in Maxwell's time, actually for many decades at that point. And this wave equation describes the propagation of a wave moving through space, and every wave equation has a term in it that reflects the speed of that wave. So a wave is a periodic disturbance that transmits energy through space, and these waves propagate at a speed. And so he could read off what would be the speed of this electromagnetic wave. And it had the speed, he calculated what would the speed of this wave be, and it matched the then measured speed of light. People already had measured what the speed of light was, And here he was saying that electromagnetic waves propagate the speed of light. And so he had the kind of courage to say, I actually think what's going on here is all light is electromagnetic waves. And moreover, his equations predicted that there should be a vast range of possible electromagnetic waves, which had not yet been detected.
Hmm.
Well, later in 1887, Heinrich Hertz produced the first radio waves using the ideas of Maxwell's equations. And they had these radio waves had all of the properties as predicted by Maxwell, and thus were discovered to be a new longer form, longer wavelength form of light. So we have infrared, visible light, ultraviolet, so on and so forth, and now radio waves.
Talking with Dr. Nathan Herring from Hillsdale's Physics Department about the great physicist James Clerk Maxwell. Did Maxwell's ideas help to pave the way for relativity and quantum theory?
Absolutely. Maxwell's equations later, not during his time, but later on, Maxwell's equations were discovered to have a very important mathematical symmetry. So a symmetry, in mathematics, a symmetry is a transformation, an operation you can do on something, and it leaves it unchanged. So if you imagine an equilateral triangle, a triangle with three sides of the same length, you can rotate that triangle sufficiently, and it will look the exact same,
mm-hmm.
right? Object with perfect sort of symmetry of this kind is a circle, right? You can rotate a circle by any number of degrees and it looks exactly the same. So we can do these kind, those are called symmetry transformations, and we can do those transformations to equations as well. And it was discovered that Maxwell's equations have a very particular symmetry transformation. The mathematician who discovered this is named Lorentz, and so we call this Lorentz invariance. Interestingly, of the other laws of physics at that time, the most important of which would have been Newton's laws, did not have this symmetry. So I was kind of curious, what is the importance of this Lorentz invariance? Additionally, we talked about how Maxwell's equations predict that there should be electromagnetic waves that propagate at the speed of light. One of the subtleties of that, though, is when you do that calculation, the speed is given to you, the speed of the wave is given to you without any particular reference to some observer. And why is this important? Well, because in classical physics, we know that velocity, and therefore speed, is relative. You and I are sitting in this studio right now, and relative to me, you seem to be at rest, but we know that relative to some observer sitting outside the Earth, imagine there's someone floating out, you know, maybe on the International Space Station watching us, they would see that we are actually rotating right now around the center of the Earth, and mm-hmm. moreover, our planet is hurtling around the sun. So velocity is relative, and yet Maxwell's equations say, here's the speed of light without any context. So immediately physicists, as they started to mull this over, were like, well, this speed must be relative to something. And so they imagined that there would be this material that filled all of space called the ether. And they said, what must be going on is Maxwell's equations are giving us the speed of light relative to the ether. But the Earth is moving through space, as we just discussed. And so the Earth is moving through that ether. And so we should be able to see that effect on the propagation of light. And so they looked for this for many decades and never found it. So why is this important? Well, later on, in the early 20th century, in 1905, Albert Einstein is going to use these two ideas, the constancy of the speed of light, the idea that the speed of light is the same for everyone no matter what, and Lorentz invariance. Those two ideas are going to be the basic principles that he uses to build a new form of physics called the relativistic physics, or as we refer to it today, the theory of special relativity.
Mm-hmm.
So it's absolutely instrumental, Maxwell's equations, to the birth of relativity.
So Einstein once said the work of Maxwell was the most profound, the most fruitful that physics had seen since Newton. Given that praise, given what we know about Maxwell, his contributions, why isn't he more of a household name?
Yeah, this is a great question. Our listeners know about Einstein. They've probably heard about Newton.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked on this program about Michael Faraday, and they've probably even heard about that, the idea of a Faraday cage.
Yes.
May be familiar to them. Why not Maxwell? Why is he not more famous, given all of the importance of the work he's done? Well, Maxwell was not very good at self-promotion. He was an extremely humble person. When I teach a class here at Hillsdale College called Physics 100, Great Principles of Physics, one of the things I have my students do is read this inaugural lecture by Maxwell. He's giving this lecture to a bunch of physics students in his time, and he's talking about important work that's going on. And he spends a lot of time talking about the work of another physicist named Lord Kelvin. about his work on atoms. And then at the end of the lecture, he says, oh, also, there have been some investigations into electromagnetic phenomena that seem very promising. And there he's talking about himself. And he's referring to Maxwell's equations, extremely important work, but he's underselling it. So he was not very good at taking promoting the things he had done and taking credit for it. So we had to rely on other physicists to sort of evangelize the theory for him. Moreover, his great work was expressed in a very difficult mathematical form. And so most physicists of his time really couldn't follow very carefully what he was doing. It took a later generation, people like Olivier Heaviside, Josiah Gibbs, Hermann von Helmholtz, to sort of understand his theory and promulgate it to the rest of the physics community. And by that time, we're already entering the very late 19th century. And so we have other revolutionary figures like Planck, Niels Bohr, Albert Einstein. They're already on the horizon. So because of that, Maxwell kind of got missed his moment, so to say. And then I would say, even in their modern form, Maxwell's equations are just not as pithy as F equals MA or E equals MC squared. So it's just hard to talk about and appreciate the work of Maxwell if you haven't studied a little bit of advanced mathematics or going to make the effort at least to try to get more in touch with how physicists think about these phenomena.
Dr. Nathan Herring, Assistant Professor of Physics here at Hillsdale College, as we talk about these great physicists, including James Clerk Maxwell. Dr. Herring, thanks for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thank you.
That will wrap up this edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Our thanks to John Bachman of Newsmax. His brand new book is Turning Point, How Reagan Liberated Grenada and Won the Cold War. And also thanks to Nathan Herring from Hillsdale's Physics Department. Remember, you can hear new episodes every week on this station. You also can find extended versions of some of our interviews or listen anytime to the podcast. Find it at podcast.hillsdale.edu or wherever you get your audio. Until next week, I'm Scott Bertram, and this has been the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
The Shasta College Art Gallery presents a Japanese woodblock print exhibition featuring works from the traditional ukiyo-e period to contemporary artists. Explore beautifully crafted prints with many pieces available for purchase to support Shasta College Student Show Awards. Join us for the closing reception on April 16th at noon in Building 300 during Shasta College Cultural Day. The gallery is open Monday through Thursday 8 to 5 and Fridays 8 to noon. More information can be found at shastacollege.edu/events.
Attention veterans, did you know that Shasta College and Simpson University have veterans resource centers to assist you in your educational pursuits? These centers offer a wide range of support services, including financial aid, tutoring, IT support, and more. We understand the unique challenges that veterans face and are committed to helping you succeed. Our experienced staff is here to help you navigate the college experience and achieve your academic and career goals. Don't let anything stand in your way. This message is brought to you by Senator Maurice Johannesson, former Secretary of California Veterans Affairs.
Hi, this is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
The only real estate agent I trust right here in Redding and Shasta County is Josh Barker with Josh Barker Real Estate. Now, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Sean.
Now, for someone that needs to move quickly or something like a job transfer, well, what steps can you take to make sure that their home gets sold fast and for the most money?
Sean, that is an excellent question. We actually have three ways that we'll approach that. One is we actually as an office have what's called an instant offer. So if you need it sold fast, we can do it really fast. But the truth is if you want to maximize your selling price and get done quickly, then it actually means that you're going to want to sit down, identify a marketing plan, talk about what to do to prep your home for sale, and then be really clear on two things, your time frame and the price, because those two things merging together is ultimately going to equal your outcome. So having that kind of conversation in advance will go a long ways.
All right. Thanks for keeping us up to date. Go online to ReddingHomes.com or just Google.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Redding by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.